Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Mothball Prophecies. I am your host, Jonathan. Accept no cheap imitations. If I sound a bit excited, it's because I just watched Escape from the Secret Lab, which, if it's not your favorite live stream on Friday nights, it should be. Tonight they had on Tomb of Nick Cage, and they were fucking awesome. And I'm not just saying that because they gave a shout out to yours truly. If you like horror punk songs about cryptids and conspiracies, give them a listen. And the show ended on a cliffhanger. I'll find a link to a replay and put it in the show notes. And you should all tune in next week to see how everything plays out. But back to the Mothball Prophecies. Anyone who's remotely familiar with New Orleans knows that we have a long history of vampires taking up residence here. From the fictional tales told by Anne Rice, to the legendary Carter brothers, who are similarly fictional, but pushed off as historical fact. Heck, we even covered a vampire who was the incarnation of the Comte de Saint-Germain in one of our episodes. But the one that hooked me before I even moved to this city was the tale of vampires housed by the Ursuline nuns in the French Quarter. My introduction to this story was a fantastic presentation by Lord Chaz, who runs Vampire Street Theater and Ghost Tours. If the current madness ever ends and New Orleans can safely reopen, I highly recommend you sign up for a tour from them and enjoy the spectacle and deeply haunted history of New Orleans. And as an aside, Airbnb owners, please stop renting your properties out to plague bags from Mississippi, Alabama, and elsewhere, or we'll never get back out of lockdown. There are better ways to make a buck without putting the rest of us at risk. But anyway, the story of the Ursuline nuns bringing vampires to the fair city of New Orleans is a tale rich in history and historicity, sprinkled liberally with some inaccurate translations from French to English, as well as conflation. But we'll get into that a bit later. The story, in very broad strokes, is as follows. When New Orleans was just starting off, it was a foundering and possibly floundering city. It was mostly swampland full of alligators, disease, and local inhabitants who were far from pleased that white people were laying claim to land that wasn't theirs to begin with. And, surprisingly, the mortality rate among French settlers was extremely high. To solve this problem, the Ursuline nuns pleaded with the King of France, or the Pope, depending on the storyteller, to send more women. New Orleans needs more women! As a response, a dozen girls of marrying age were gathered, placed on a boat, and sent to New Orleans. These girls were, again, depending on the tale, from France or from Eastern Europe. The one commonality in every version of the story, however, is that each girl brought all of their belongings in a casket. This may seem very morbid, or extremely practical if the girls came from Eastern Europe, but given the high mortality rate, bringing one's own casket may not seem out of the ordinary. It's like a very bleak gesture of goodwill. You know, you bring all of your belongings in a casket, and the odds are in your favor that you're probably not gonna make it. So bring your own casket. Like BYOB, but different. But once the girls were settled into the city of New Orleans so that they could help increase the population, quite the opposite happened. The death rate increased, and people were found with strange bites and scratches, completely drained of blood. Oh, yes, the casket girls still remained in the Ursulines convent, and the city eventually flourished until it became the crown of international tourism and commerce that it is today. So maybe the girls dialed back on their feeding. The casket girls were relegated to the attic of the convent, where the windows were nailed shut. 30-plus nails were put around each window, and to this day, you can still walk by Ursulines at night and see the windows nailed shut. But don't blink, and don't turn around for a second, or you'll see those very windows wide open, letting anyone or anything out into the city to feed on unsuspecting tourists, and probably get a good buzz from the blood alcohol content, only to return unnoticed before dawn when the windows mysteriously close. But we'll get back to that story after these words.
Hello! Dr. Pinkerton of the Consortium of Genius here, ensconced within my secret lab. At long last, the time has come to reveal my master plan. While you have all been preoccupied with that insipid but popular virus making the rounds, I have been readying my laboratory for a bold new test. The evaluation and elimination of my sonic competition for world takeover! Yes, ladies and gentlemen, every week I shall be capturing a different band here in the secret lab and subjecting them to hideous, hard-rocking experimentation live! Friday night at 8 p.m. Be here to see what fate befalls the unwary and find out if they can escape from the secret lab!
Now, to understand the origins of this tale of vampires who were sanctioned by the Catholic Church, much like the Rougarou in our very first episode, we must dive deeper into who the Casket Girls and the Ursuline Nuns were at that time. I'm not going to say the tale is, well, bullshit, but like every fascinating story in New Orleans, I like to dig into the history and find its origins. While the Casket Girls and the Ursuline Nuns played very real roles in the history of New Orleans and helped shape the city into what it is today, their stories are rather separate. And for the sake of this episode, we're going to take things chronologically, by starting off with the former, while discussing the Ursuline Nuns later in the episode, if time allows. There are very few records on the Casket Girls, and they went by many names. The Fils de Roi, the Fils de Cassette, and the Fils de Casket, among others. And yes, my French is horrible. I have taken 6 years of French in my life, and I excelled at reading it. Speaking it, no, not to save my life. The girls were either young women of ill repute, or they were virginal women of marrying age who were destitute and had nowhere to go, depending on which story you want to believe. The one thing the stories all have in common is that the girls were given a new lease on life with the offer to sail to the dirt town of New Orleans to help improve the population, bear children, and be subservient wives to the men of the city. Now, it is true that the Casket Girls did bring their belongings with them, but the legendary aspects of their true nature comes down to the people either intentionally or unintentionally mistranslating the word casket. If we go with the French word casquette, that's C-A-S-Q-U-E-T-T-E, it means cap. So perhaps the Fils de Casquette wore hats, which would make for a very boring grain of truth in an otherwise salacious vampire tale. If we go with cassette, which would mean a small container or case, and this suddenly makes sense. For there are many references in literature to a coffin or casket as being a tiny house or a tiny box. Brush up on your Emily Dickinson if you don't believe me. The truth from the few documents that exist state that indeed the Casket Girls each had small boxes or cases that housed their belongings, but that's all it was. It was luggage. They didn't bring coffins with them. Hell, think about how much space those things would take up on a boat, even if there were only 12 Casket Girls crossing the Atlantic. Unless, of course, they slept in them for the whole trip. And, you know, didn't try to cross running water in New Orleans, right at the mouth of the Mississippi River. Anyway, the Casket Girls bolstered the population of New Orleans, and they helped to literally give birth to some of the first native New Orleanians, and especially helped to save the city the first time. But that's sort of where the story of the Casket Girls trails off. Now, we need to shift our attention to the Ursuline nuns, and how their order influenced and continues to influence the city of New Orleans to this very day. The Ursuline nuns, unbeknownst to the good people of New Orleans, had the ability to transform into bears under the light of the full moon. These werebears would conspire with the vampiric Casket Girls to hold the city in an iron grip of fear for 300 years, when they were finally defeated by the time-traveling bionic Joan of Arc. There are some who say this may never have happened, and I am one of those people. Back to reality. To understand the Ursulines in New Orleans, we have to go back to the founding of their order. And to do that, we have to go back not just to early Christianity, but to ancient Greece, specifically Aristotle. We must also acknowledge our source for much of the material of the Ursuline nuns, Masterless Mistresses, the New Orleans Ursulines and the Development of a New World Society, 1727 to 1834, by Emily Clark, which I will link in the show notes. You see, like most of the societal and ideological problems in the Western world, everything can be traced back to either Christianity, the patriarchy, or a combination of the two. Aristotle, going back to ancient Greece, believed, and not as a thought exercise, that women were incomplete and inferior when compared to men. This wasn't so much a philosophical revelation so much as it was that Aristotle chose the wrong partner, had a horrible relationship, and decided to expand that to a global hot take. He would have been huge on Reddit if Reddit had existed at the time. Jumping forward a few centuries to the late 1500s, the Catholic Church decided to embrace the Aristotelian view of women, which really disrupted things for people in general. Women in those times actually had more agency than many like to imagine. Women were business owners, employees, and stood on more equal footing with men than in the centuries to follow. By adopting the views of Aristotle, the Catholic Church sought to make women more servile by giving them two options. One, accept the role of motherhood and raise good Catholic children who could in turn be fruitful and multiply. Or number two, join a closed order, meaning nuns, and serve God in a convent. This was a win-win for the men of the Catholic society. But as per usual with arbitrary rules, not much of a choice for the women involved. At this time, the Company of Saint Ursula decided to choose the second option and exploited a loophole that would ultimately help themselves, the aristocracy, and later on, lay the foundation for New Orleans in all its extremely problematic glory. Saint Ursuline is the saint of orphans and female students, though I do believe the part about the students was kind of tacked on later. The Company of Saint Ursula became a closed order to align with a shift in Catholic beliefs. However, the Ursulines saw an opportunity for women of their order to not only remain on the good side of the Catholic Church in their piety as nuns, but also retain the agency that was being restricted by the very same church. See, many orders sought to align themselves with Jesus as a way to know God. It almost seems like a default setting when you think about it. Follow in the steps of God made flesh, and one can be closer to the unknowable Almighty. And as the Catholic Church was placing the focus on the alleged superiority of men, this all made sense. Jesus was a dude, God must be a dude, both are infallible and perfect, therefore, let's worship men. But the Ursuline nuns took a different approach to knowing God. They posited that in the transaction of sending Jesus to earth, God did not confer with a mortal man. God conferred with Mary, and she was the one who gave birth to Jesus. On top of that, Mary was the one who nurtured and taught the young Jesus until he was a man. You know, unless you've slogged through the Gnostic Bibles and are familiar with that story where Jesus kills one of his playmates during a temper tantrum, but I'll save that one for another time. Anyway, by laying down this philosophy, the Ursuline order had a plan which both the Catholic Church and the French aristocracy endorsed. The plan was thus: 1. Take care of the orphans of France, specifically the girls of France. The girls would receive care, and many of them would end up choosing to devote themselves to the order of the Catholic Church. This gave the Church a growing number of followers. Part 2 is how the Ursuline nuns retained agency and identity at a time when women were being relegated to the roles of vessels for babies. The Ursulines would instruct the daughters of the upper classes to read and write and teach them a wide range of topics for a fee. This was business. So, by embracing Mary as the conduit between God and Jesus, I guess while Joseph stood in the corner and kind of watched, and by extension man, and positioning Mary as not only a religious figure, but a teacher, the Ursulines rejected male dominance and became sought-after teachers while still remaining one of the prominent and respected closed orders in Catholicism. And with the support of the Catholic Church, as well as the King of France, a number of Ursuline nuns embarked to America. This first group of nuns arrived in Alabama in 1719, and seeing how their main mission was literacy, it's kind of up in the air as to how successful they were in Alabama. The second group arrived in New Orleans in 1728, a full year after the aforementioned Casket Girls, according to written records. And it is with this group that our story will continue next time in part 2 of the Ursuline Nuns, when we will go over how the nuns managed to confront the Spanish, provide agency to women in New Orleans, how they took part in ventures which were much more real and much more problematic than just housing vampires, and how they weathered Protestantism. We'll also go over where the Ursulines are today, and heck, we may even uncover a vampire or two in the process. Until then, sleep tight.